this is Angela Middleton, and welcome to my podcast called I Want to Be A. The reason for this podcast is that there is a huge lack of careers advice in the UK, and I'm always asked by young people, by parents and by teachers, my views on improving careers advice, and particularly by parents, what should they say to their youngster who's leaving school. I think it is a wider subject. It's not just about what job do you want to do, but it is actually about how you want your life to be. And within that, what type of career you want to select. And that career can just be the first stepping stone. Nowadays, individuals have a whole portfolio of careers. The people that I've interviewed, even at the age of 30, have had four or five careers. Myself, I've had at least five different types of careers. So this podcast is about firstly talking about careers in general and careers advice, but secondly, bringing in individuals who have experienced careers in particular industries, hence the subject I Want to Be A, and they can come and talk about the path that they took to actually get to where they are, and also talk about what it's like to actually do that job and have that career. So we'll be covering every type of career that we can think of in the UK, and it will be everything from architects to zoologists. So I'll look forward to comments, and we'll build things up as we go along, and hopefully it should be of great use to parents, to teachers and to young people. So today I'm interviewing Steve Sutherland, who is a sports marketing expert. Steve has had an illustrious career in football, actually, but on the marketing and business development side. He spent a lot of time working for Charlton Athletic. He worked for the Football League. He also was the CEO of Swindon Town for a full season. And then he moved back to Charlton, where he spent what he would call their golden years. After that, he established himself as a freelance sports marketing agent, and during that time he's done a variety of different projects for clients, including charities, schools and a number of different sporting organisations. Steve is one of the most genuine, hard-working, nicest people that I've ever come across, and he's got a lovely story to tell us here. And for those of you that are interested in sports or marketing or sports marketing, this will be a great one for you to listen to. Lots of hints and tips as well as nice stories. So Steve, lovely to see you today.
It's lovely to be here, Angela.
Thanks so much for joining us. And if we could start with a rundown of, I must say, your illustrious career. From when you were at school through to now. Now, there's a lot for you to tell us. So I know that you're only going to be able to explain some headlines. But let's start with where you went to school and how school was for you.
Yeah, well, I'm a Plumstead, South London boy, and went to a primary school in Plumstead, and which I'm now school governor of. And from there, I went to what was called then Shooters Hill Grammar School, and that's on Woolwich Common. And I was quite bright, if I say so myself. I was always in the top level of school, primary school, and then in grammar school. And I was always one of the leading lights in the sports. I was captain of the athletics team and in the rugby team and things like that. So I've always had that sort of about me, that intelligence, if you like, yeah, really, without being academic. I knew I was never academic.
Although, I mean, I know that you had your gifts, you were sporty, you were bright, and although you say you weren't academic, you know, you're still very competent, yeah, with your exams. But you had your adversity at school as well, didn't you?
Yeah, I did, yeah. When I was 15, I came home one day from school in November 71, and there were police cars waiting for me and my sister, who was only 10, because my mother had been knocked over and killed. And we suddenly found ourselves a single parent family, two young children, me coming up to mock O-level time. And my grandmother moved in, my father's mother moved in with us and gave us that stability at home that enabled us to carry on without too much of an interruption, really, and allowed my father to carry on at work.
Yeah, it's very, very sad for you. That was a very sad story.
Yeah, it was a big hurdle to get over, yeah, for me and my sister.
Adversity for you very early on.
Very early, yeah.
Did you have any work experience while you were at school?
If you can call delivering your morning paper work experience, then yeah, I did a paper round. And at weekends, I went and did straight from the paper round and did a milk round. Right. So I was a milk boy in the 60s and thoroughly enjoyed it. And I think it gave me my, I've always been quite gregarious, but I think it gave me my confidence in dealing with people, dealing with customers and the various different personalities you saw on the doorstep. It was great.
And I think, you know, any job is what you make it, because others might have looked at that job and said, God, it's freezing cold, you're getting up early and a drudge.
Oh,
but you made the most of it, didn't you?
It was cold. Yeah, I mean, you know, don't tell anyone, but I used to wear my mum's tights, you know, on a cold Sunday morning, because
no one else is going to hear this, don't worry.
It was flipping freezing, and, yeah, you know, you still had to go out there and deliver people's milk.
Absolutely. So when you were, how old were you when you left school?
I was 17.
And tell us about that.
Well, careers advice in schools hasn't really progressed much. I came in one day and I had started A-levels, and the French teacher was also our careers advisor. And he just literally pointed at four of us and said, right, you, go down to Midland Bank at Plumstead. They've got an open day for people to work in the bank. And we said we'd send four. And I was chosen. And I found myself wandering around this bank branch in Plumstead. And 3 weeks later, I started at Midland Bank Woolwich, gave up my A-levels and went to work. A bit of that was because wanting to help my dad bring some money into the family. But of that, because they made it quite attractive. And as long as you had O levels and were A level standard, you could get into the bank.
And like with your work experience, you made the most of this, although maybe it wasn't your calling, as we'll find out later. And you were there for 15 years, culminating in a regional sales officer for the bank. Tell us a bit about what you were doing there by the end.
Well, I went through the whole gambit of branch banking, you know, cashing checks and how do you want the money and everything like foreign work, foreign exchange and all this. But I'd always had that sort of outgoing thing, and I was brought into a new role called business development. Banks only really started really waking up to marketing in the early 80s, in the marketing that you and I would relate to now.
Yeah.
And so I got appointed this job, and it brought me into marketing 12 branches. And then they selected me to run a brand new job called sales training officer and teach bank clerks how to be salespeople. And I was thoroughly enjoying that.
And you used your networking abilities to connect to a variety of organisations, and one was what's proved to be the love of your life.
Well, it's always been the love of my life, but then it became the whole life, really, because I reached out to famous organisations to help promote the Midland Bank at that time, and one of those was Charlton Athletic, and I became quite well known to the staff at Charlton. There were only eight of them at that time, and then one day I came home from work and got a phone call from then club secretary saying, we need a commercial manager, and I've told the chairman it should be you.
And what was your reaction?
Well, my reaction was, well, that's very kind of you.
Yeah.
What does that entail? Oh, well, you're in marketing. Honestly, I'm not paraphrasing this even. You're in marketing. We need a marketing person. We know you. So I've said it should be you.
Yeah.
So come and meet the chairman. That was it,
you
really.
You did. And you took the job. And
well, I turned it down originally because my head ruled my heart a little bit, because I'd just been promoted in the bank. And in those days, you had a cheap mortgage. And so I gave that up after a little bit of soul searching, because I thought to myself, and I think it's a lesson I've learned, you might always regret it. Opportunities come your way, and you've got to recognise when you take them and when you turn them down.
Even if they don't seem sort of perfect at the
time.
Even
if they don't seem perfect, you should always consider them. And after a heart-to-heart with my wife, I found myself starting at Charlton Athletic in January 1988, something like that. Yeah.
So you were there then for 3 years, during which time you were generating commercial income for the football club.
Yeah. I mean, a top journalist at the time, Brian Butler, who's now dead, sadly, but Brian did a feature on Charlton, and he labelled my job the toughest job in football, because Charlton played on somebody else's football ground, Crystal Palace's, and we had to promote the facilities there to a fan base who didn't want to be there. Mm. So customers weren't exactly flocking to come to that ground to watch their football team. So it was a really tough environment.
And sometimes when you operate in a tough environment like that, it does allow you to shine. So although it might seem like a bit of a bad rap and, you know, too difficult, it can lead on to opportunities.
Well, you can mope around. You can mope around and feel sorry for yourself, or you can say, this is an opportunity. And I saw it as an opportunity. Yeah. And I wanted Charlton to be first. So radio licences were given, local radio. And I made Charlton be the first club ever to have its own radio show. ever.
And this brought you to the attention of the Football League.
Football League. And so this was pre-Premier League. So the Football League were all powerful in those days. And the Football League were then Divisions 1, 2, 3 and 4. And they just came and asked me to join them. Literally said, we need a commercial manager who understands the clubs. And that's you. So come and join us. So I found myself giving up Charlton.
So you were there for 8 years, and during which, tell us a bit about
that. Well, after the Football League had been going for just over 100 years, and I joined it, and then it started to split up, and people started to blame me. Because I joined in January in 91. In March 91, the first meetings of what became the Premier League started to happen. And in August 92, the Premier League started. So basically, the top clubs left the Football League and left the Football League to their own devices. And I and two or three other colleagues had to pick up the pieces. Mm. And that meant we had to prove that the Football League was a vehicle for sponsorship in its own right without our top clubs.
And you achieved a couple of major deals there, didn't you?
Yeah, I'm very proud of the fact that the first sponsor we did on our own was with a company called Ensley Insurance, who were the world's biggest insurer of students. And then 3 years into that, we needed a bigger brand, if you like. They're a big brand, Ensley, but we needed an even bigger one. And I replaced them with Nationwide Building Society.
Amazing. And these things don't happen overnight. And it just shows, you know, with the sticking power and conscientious effort, you can achieve big deals like that. Takes a bit of time. So 8 years there, and then you felt that you wanted to get more into the front-facing
football?
Yeah,
I wanted to get back into club football. I had a hankering to get back into club football, and the Football League was changing. Politics in the is everywhere, isn't it? But there were politics in the Football League, and it was changing. And I felt I'd gone as far as I could, and I'd put out the feelers that I wanted to go back into club football, and one club jumped on that, and that was Swindon Town. And so in the early summer of 1998, I left the Football League and joined Swindon Town Football Club. Initially as commercial director, but after 5 minutes, literally, I became joint CEO. The CEO was literally an accountant. He was a finance man.
So you were there.
So we shared the duties, really.
So you were there for one season only.
One season where I learned more in that one season than probably the three or four before.
And looking back at that, I know that you said to me separately before that, you know, that didn't go as you'd expected. What would you take from that?
I think you never really make a mistake, I think. You know, they're all learning experiences. People say to me now, oh, that was a mistake going there, wasn't it? And I always rebuff that. And I say, no, it wasn't. I learned so much there. I was thrown in at the deep end. I did so much in that 1 year that put me in good stead for when I then came back into football later.
After that, you had a little bit of downtime. Tell us about that.
That was probably the worst period of my career, really, and probably the worst year since my mother died in 71. In that, I didn't have a crisis of confidence, but suddenly the phone wasn't ringing, and I felt that people would just immediately throw offers at me to come back into football because I'd achieved so much. I was high profile. And after about 3 months when I really was struggling, if I'm honest with you, I was struggling, I got a phone call from one of the top football agents, a guy called John Smith, who ran First Artist. And he just gave me an opportunity to help his company. And a week or so after that, I found myself hosting Match of the Day Live at the NEC in Birmingham.
And so that's where you got some really good experience as an MC.
Yeah, I'd already hosted a few for Charlton, but that was the real biggie for me.
After you'd done that interim sort of work with the agency, you were back at Charlton this year for a really amazing period of your career. Tell us about that.
Oh, it was probably, I thoroughly enjoyed my Football League years, but I got a call from a friend, and he was CEO at Charlton at the time, Peter Marnie. And he basically said, there's so much work to be doing here. We're revamping this football club and we're redeveloping it. I need some help. Come and help me. So I found myself back at Charlton Athletic in 2000. As Peter Varney's assistant. So I was assistant to the CEO. And then within a few months, I was made commercial director. And that was a period of huge success for Charlton. We got into the Premier League. We stayed there for 7 years. And then bricks started coming out the wall. And I found myself after 7 years or so realising that it was probably time to move on from football as well, from Charlton.
And what happened then was you left and you actually established yourself independently with your own company. And if you don't mind me saying, this was in your 50s.
It was, yeah.
And I think that's, you know, we need to sort of just stop and reflect on that a moment, that there may be a perception that, you know, if you get to your 50s and you haven't already started your own business, then maybe it's too late. But absolutely not, because you just started there. And you've had an amazing experience with your own business since then. So, and I think you said it's been going for 9 years now.
9 years now, Angela.
So,
yeah.
Give us a sort of a flavour of the sorts of things that you've done during that 9 years. Well, and obviously, that includes working for us as well.
It did, and very enjoyably as well. I'd always wanted to, at some stage, be my own boss and do my own thing and capitalise on my profile. I did have, and still reasonably do, have a high profile in that area. And when you work for a football club, and I was never shy of putting myself forward, people would know you. So I'd always felt at some point. So I started on my own as a marketing consultant, sports marketing consultant. And as I say, I did Charlton shirt sponsorship and their kit sponsorships. But I also found my network came to the fore, because when people realised I was unencumbered with, I wasn't just Steve at Charlton, I was just me. People started inviting me to come on board and help them. So I suddenly found myself helping Greenwich Council in the build-up to the London 2012 Olympics. Yeah. And in the same vein, a contact of mine, who I made when I was at Charlton, was advising the British Amateur Boxing Association, and he wanted help. So I found myself as commercial consultant of the British Amateur Boxing Association in the build-up to the London 2012 Olympics. I mean, you can't plan that. That's just...
These things happen as a result of the network that you'd established.
Exactly.
And then most recently, I know that you've been doing a lot more of what you really love as well, which is the emceeing.
Yeah, as I say, I got into that in my football career, and really, I enjoy that thrill of, and that responsibility of, when you're emceeing a big charity dinner, it's all on your shoulders. You're on stage more than anyone else, more than the speakers, more than the acts. You're on stage all night, and you have to make sure that it flows on time. And I love the challenge of that. And I love when it's worked and you walk off and everyone's had a great time.
And you are.
And I really enjoy that.
You are very, very, very competent and very good at that. You make it look easy, and I know it's not. So I think what we've got here is an example of somebody who really... embodies the whole concept of portfolio of careers.
Yes.
And a great example of how you can go on a journey of constant reinvention, following different dreams, you know, developing different skills. Give us an idea now of a typical day for you, Steve.
A typical day for me is I give myself a few set things that I need to do, and whether that's me doing social media for some of my clients now, whether that's planning their social media program for the day or for the week.
You start off at the gym, don't you?
I try and get to the gym 2 or 3 days a week. And it's also a good, working for yourself, it's also a good social network as well, because there are people there, other people working for themselves, and we meet up and have a bit of breakfast. And it's a good social start to my day. Mm-hmm. Then I could take a call from the Charlton Community Trust. We're in the middle of our 25th anniversary of being back at the Valley, so I'm on that committee. Or I could take a call from my garage client or one of my other clients. And it's a varied day, really, Angela, you know. But if I wanted to go and spend half a day at the Charlton Trust or the charity that I helped found in the build-up to the London 2012 Olympics, Greenwich Starting Blocks, I could do that. Mm. And that's a luxury that I think I've got now because of how hard I've worked and where I've got in my career.
Well, tell me what, you know, you particularly enjoy or love about where you are in your career now.
I love the variety that I've always tried to have, whether that's in my 9 to 5, if you want to classify it like that, career, or now. I like the variety of, and I like not knowing what tomorrow will bring as well, you know, because if I feel I can make a difference, I'll go and help somebody. I'll go and work with somebody. So I like that sort of balance that I've got in my life now between paid work, which we all need, and the charity work. And I've got the perfect balance.
Tell me what challenges, if any, you face now, what the worst part of your career is, if any.
I suppose challenges is just making sure that you're still making a difference. You still have to reinvent yourself all the time. If you think about it, I started work in 73. Can you imagine thinking what world would be like in 40 years time. You can't, can you? Mm-hmm. So I've had to constantly reinvent, and I'm still doing it, you know. And so I think the challenges of never knowing what's coming, but being open to anything, really. If it doesn't sound too egotistical, I don't do what I don't want to do now. You know, I won't take on a work and just literally go through the motions with it. If I don't want to do it, or if I don't think I can make a real difference, then I won't do it. And I have that flexibility now, which, you know, you might say, well, that's a luxury. It isn't. I've worked hard to get to that.
Absolutely. And before we sort of advise the people, which I'm sure there's lots of people who want to be in this sort of happy place where you are. But before we do that, I know that you've still got lots of ambitions and, you know, lots of drive and energy. Where else do you think this could lead? What other things do you think you might do in the future?
Yeah, I want to do more of the MCing work now as I've got more time. And I really do enjoy it, and I do feel, and I've also seen it done so badly when I've been to events, so I am trying to now expand that. Last December was so busy, I did 3 events in a matter of a week.
And it's not just about, you know, the bit that you're doing on stage. There's a lot of prep for isn't there?
Script writing. I want to do more writing, as you know, Angela. I've been trying to pen a book about all the goings on behind the scenes at the Football League, mm-hmm. during what was the most iconic period in its history, the breakup of it and the Premier League start. I was there. I want to do that book and just carry on making a difference if I can somewhere.
And so for people that are listening, and this is likely to be individuals that are somewhere along their career and are wondering, you know, what they're going to do at the end of it, or maybe, you know, they feel stuck and they want to do some different things. And they, you know, they can sort of see where you are and they wonder, have you been lucky? Have you orchestrated it this way? You know, I mean, what would be your advice for them doing maybe a 9-to-5 job, as you were at one point, to get to where you are now?
I think you know if you're not happy somewhere and you're going through the motions. If you can honestly look at yourself in the mirror and say you're going through the motions, then get out. You know, what do you enjoy doing? And even if you try that by volunteering somewhere first, you know, and just getting a taste for it, but never get stuck in a rut, you know, and also value your network. And people say to me, I haven't got a network. They have, you know. If you've been at work a few years, you've got a network. Clients, people who you deal with on a daily basis. You know, it might be that you can stop what you're going through the motions with and go off and do something that you really do like, and you can make a difference. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter how old you are, opportunities will still come your way. You just got to recognize them and be prepared to take them. Mm-hmm. Some people go for the safe option and stay where they are. I've never really been like that. Otherwise, I wouldn't have gone to Swindon Town.
And I think you really do embody that concept of building your network and utilizing your network, because as you mentioned to me at the beginning, although you've done all these different things and had all these different jobs and different types of careers, you've actually never had an interview, have you?
No, the only interview I had was the Midland Bank, mm. you know, but I don't really class that as an interview, because I suddenly found myself after one meeting starting at Midland Bank Woolwich. I don't even remember it as an interview. So no, I have never, ever had an interview for a job.
I personally believe that you've not had to have one because of the way that you operate. The way that you operate is in a very authentic manner at all times. So it's almost that people don't feel they need to interview you because they see how you operate. They work with you on a sort of a day-to-day basis. They see the real you. And so they recognise your qualities. And so I would just honestly say congratulations to you for
Thank
that,
you.
For being
yeah,
authentic.
I really appreciate that, Angela. Thank
and
you.
And genuinely wanting to add value, help people where you can, connect people. And there's so much to be said for that.
People have challenges and they have issues and problems. If you can help them solve that problem, they'll take you. They'll embrace you.
Yeah.
And I've always tried to come in, identify a problem with people and then help them with that problem.
Yeah.
Whether that's no one knows about us, or whether that's a sponsorship I need to do, or whether that's come and advise us on how to set up a dinner that raises money. I just think you've always got something to offer, really.
Yeah, a solution provider is always going to be in demand.
That's a good way of putting it, yeah.
So, Steve Sutherland, the solution provider, thank you very much indeed. That's been an absolute pleasure.
It certainly has. Thank you very much, Angela.